You've tuned in to Tabletop Meta, a podcast where we talk about the meta of tabletop gaming.
Why we game, how we game, what games we play, and what all that says about us as gamers and people.
Hello, I'm Will.
And I'm Becky.
And welcome to Tabletop Meta.
Because there's more to gaming than just playing the game.
Well, I hope you've all been doing well. It's still snowing here. I really hope it will end soon.
Ah, we live in northern Wisconsin. Winter goes full on into spring around here.
Yes, true on that. But the good news is we've been keeping to gaming, which has been really good. And our gaming group is actually getting a couple extra people, which has been really nice.
Very exciting.
But that's also important because of what we're going to talk about today. Today we're going to talk about one of a very important topic for me. Something I very much enjoy is teaching games. What about you, Beck? Do you enjoy teaching games?
Well, I like to teach games. I don't do it very often because that's kind of your bag.
You really enjoy that.
Yes. I come from a family of teachers, and I work a great deal with 4-H, mm-hmm. and that is all about teaching, and it's all about teaching kids how to teach.
It's also just the learning the experience, not succeeding or failing per se, but at least trying to say, is this something I like doing?
Yeah. To learn by doing. You have to learn the game. You have to play the game to learn the game.
Yes.
But you have to get to the point where you can actually play it.
Well, that's the thing. And to me, it's been something because I like to try a immense variety of games. Teaching and learning games becomes a little bit second nature. Not every game is easy to learn. There are some very complex games out there, and you never always get it quite right. I mean, there's some games I have down pat because I've played them many times, and there's some that I'm just learning and I can get people through it. I mean, we can look through it. But we've also had, you know, and I think everyone can probably associate, especially if you've gone to a con, you can talk about the good and bad experiences when you're learning a game. You know, from the people who are very obsessed to the ones you can just tell have absolutely, this is their lifeblood. They enjoy it very much. Becky and I have had several different experiences, and we've had good and we've had bad. And one of the bad ones was Gen Con. Mage Knight, so that's an older game, but this was one that really stood out for us. And it was, they had done it as a slight demo teaching thing, but it was a promotion and one of
I believe that Mage Knight was just coming out at that time.
No, it actually was, there was like, I think it was just starting to get to another expansion.
Maybe that was it. I know that there was a fairly large wait to get into demo the game with them.
But what they had set up was a nice terrain, and I think this is when they introduced the dragons.
Oh, that could be.
And the idea is they had very nice metal figures painted, which, you know, Mage Knight is a pre-printed plastic figure, which is nice, but to get a painted one, it's kind of a little gem kind of to grab. And so it was a table where you had the players on the outside and you had the demoers on the inside who were running the game, explaining it and playing the dragons and beating you down. But the thing is, if you were got in and worked together, whoever made the kill got the figure. So it was then there to teach people.
And they were there basically to give away those figures.
That was the idea. But we did run into a very aggressive teacher who we even commented, it's like, guy, you need to like tone it down a little bit. And he could not turn. He said, no, I can't turn this off. That's the way I play.
And he was very aggressive, and he greatly enjoyed destroying all of the people who came to demo the game.
At least that was the impression we got.
And it was interesting because from the people who were demoing it, no one was really having fun.
Yeah.
And my point that was, I think he should have made it fun. And unless, you know, he only had one dragon figure to give away and he was under strict orders never to give that one up, which I don't believe. I mean, this is what, Wizards of the Coast, right?
You never know.
I don't know who was doing it.
You never know.
But he made it very, hard to enjoy the game. And I don't believe that that is important. I think making it fun is important when you're teaching a game.
And so I've definitely worked on making it enjoyable when I'm playing a game. And then
but I do have to say that there was another guy there who was also demoing it. We came back later and he was much better. He had it set up. He made sure that, you know, well, what is it? He made sure that he asked everybody what they wanted to do. And even if it wasn't the best strategy, he went along with it because that's what, and everybody had a lot better time.
Yeah. And I've really worked at making teaching games an enjoyable experience. And one of my favorite stories that I have a bit of a pride on is a few years ago, I was helping run the gaming at Wizard World down in Madison. And I had volunteered to help be at the game area, which was a smaller area. And it was basically help people pick games. It was if they picked the game and they wanted help teaching, we could jump in and help them. And there was a group of five players that had gotten Battlestar Galactica, which, if anyone has played that game, it is a hidden role, or possibly where you are playing the humans and one person or no one could be the traitor and you're trying to help the humans survive. It is a very complex game. There's a lot of tokens involved with it. And it's something you can't teach in 5 minutes. It's to me, it's virtually impossible to do that. But within a half an hour, I was able to give them a overview of the game, watch them a couple rounds, and get them to the point where they were enjoying the game and having a very good time. They were into the environment and they were enjoying it. So that gets into, you know, how you prepare, what you know. Ideally, it's best if you know the game inside and out. You know, if you know all the components and then can bring that to the players because you know exactly how piece A moves to piece B or action C, this is what happens.
Yeah, I can't comment on Battlestar. It's just not my game.
No.
But Battlestar is one of those that has several stages to it, if I understand the game correctly, once you move into who the traitor is.
And other traitors can be exposed. Right. Someone who wasn't a traitor
But it's also an extraordinarily thematic game.
Right.
So you do have, and since it works with its theme, if you have people who understand the theme and embrace it, that will help. And I think that's the point too, where not only knowing your game but knowing who you're teaching to,
right, is important. That definitely becomes into when you prepare. Now for that was something that it was very much off the cuff, and I happened to know the game, so it was a lot easier for me. But you want to know, first of all, if you're going to be teaching a game, you want to know where you're teaching it and what you're doing. Are you going to be demoing it for experienced players who, you know, just want a refresher? Are you going to be with young kids? Are you with a group that has games but maybe are looking to new games? Are you playing with people who have no idea what you're talking about?
Yeah, learning games is, it's one of those things. Learning a board game, once you know one board game, it will help you learn other board games because you have similar mechanics at play.
Right.
That you have. Now, my teaching, since Will does most of the teaching for the game groups that we have, my teaching goes more for the 4-H, since I tend to introduce, I'm the 4-H ambassador advisor. So that's teenagers. And we tend to go to a couple conventions, the Fall Forum here in Wisconsin. And we went there. And at that point, we were just trying to introduce people into the concept of board gaming, because many of them had no idea. So we set up Flick 'em Up.
Oh, yeah, and had several other games along there.
We had quite a few different games. Some of them you could teach them, but Flick 'em Up we set up, gave them the basic rules, and then I basically just let it out there for the kids to play, because this was just an introduction to board gaming and what type of interesting games there are out there.
Right, and it's not like they were going to own the game. It was not like they were going to be playing in a tournament, you know. But we also actually, for several days before the event, we agonized on which games were we going to take. We brought about 30.
We always overpack.
We overpack. But definitely we were looking and going, okay, we know what environment we've done. We know the type of players. We know the time frame, which was short. So we looked at each of the games and go, okay, you know, if a game was an hour game, we most likely said, we're going to put it away. Anything half an hour? Okay, that's one we can maybe keep.
And I find that just introducing games is good with my ambassadors. I recently introduced them to Camel Up, and they really enjoyed that game. But
actually, I was very surprised when we played Formula D.
Yes, they loved Formula D.
They loved it, and that was very surprising to me. But see, that was also, I like Formula D. I was like, fine, you know, Beck says, well, come on and join us. Well, of course, I have Formula D, I'm in. But I was very surprised at how much they got enjoyed out of it, even though I know one of the girls was way behind, and then all of a sudden she came back
out
up.
And won the race.
Which I was really surprised, but it was just because I wasn't expecting them to get so involved with it.
And I think that's key when you're teaching a game is don't be afraid to challenge people to do things. I mean, Formula D turned out to be a very good game for them.
See, but I also know why I was maybe a little bit apprehensive about doing it. I've played Formula D hundreds of times. I think any player, when they have played something a long time, they will bring in other rules, they'll bring in expansions, they'll make it more challenging. It's not uncommon that I play games where we play with, if I can get six other players, and then everyone has a couple cars instead of one, which greatly makes the game more complex and longer. I got back to the more of the basic rules and everyone having a car, and so just kind of makes it very much more streamlined and was, you know, a lot of fun.
That's a key to a game like Formula D. It's a very simple game. And I don't mean that in a bad way. And that simplicity makes the game fun. It's not overly complicated. And I think if you can break down a game that you are teaching somebody into the very simple aspects or the very understandable aspects of the steps of the game, you know, games usually have their turn order and everything. But this goes back to what you were saying, Will, with preparation.
Now, here's a question for you. So, in talking about teaching to kids and preparing for other games, what do you think about modifying the rules for different players?
You know, I don't think that that's a bad idea, as long as you don't change the nature of the game. I used to do after-school programs for 4-H, and mm-hmm. with the middle school kids, I wanted to teach some games. We had some fun games. One of them that we played were The Adventurers, which is a very simple game. You go in, you take a bunch of treasure, and you get out before the ceiling of the pyramid falls on you.
Right, and there are just, if you know, people know, there are two adventure games. One is more like your Indiana Jones running through the cave and stuff, which we tried. I gotta try that again.
That was the second one. It's not my favorite. I like the first one's just a straight up push your luck.
Yeah, and I'd still like to try it. Maybe it works better with more people. I don't know.
But what I thought was interesting was the kids weren't actually, they were so afraid that they were going to get trapped and killed in the pyramid that they didn't actually go in and do a search. So I tended to make it easier for them, less likely for them to be killed, so that they would have more fun going in and searching. Once they played the game once or twice and they realized it was just a game and when the pyramid fell on them, they wouldn't actually die, then we made it follow back to the rule where it was easier to die.
Well, that also gets into the investigation of the players you're dealing with.
That's very true.
You know, if it depends, and it's nice because I've had many different experiences, one demoing games, two with working with groups, but at home it's actually quite interesting, and it might be common, it might be unusual, which is interesting because I've had to learn to teach two different ways in my immediate family. Beck is very much, she likes to start from the beginning and know the rules and work through to get to the goal. My daughter is a bit more, she needs to know what the goal is. So I have to work between the both of them and balance so that they both can get the concept of the game and enjoy the game at the same level, which is quite interesting a lot of times.
I tend to dislike feeling stupid, and that can't be helped when you're learning new games. So that's right. Always challenging for Will to teach games. So I like to know how the decisions are made and what my decisions, you know, the factors are to affect them. I'm trying to be less difficult of a student when Will's teaching me games.
Well, it's also, I've run into other players. It's interesting because there are all sorts of different types of players, and you have to be prepared for that. We have a player in our game group that is very much, even though we've talked about the rules and I show them, he likes to have the rule book with them, you know, so that he can review it. Very hands-on, which I think also is, don't be so critical of yourself. Accommodate the players. Another thing that also helps is one of the best resources, of course, is Board Game Geek, because you run into, for all the different games you're probably going to run into, there are tens of hundreds of fans of each of those games, and they like teaching, they like playing them, and so they've also come up with player aids also.
I think player aids are awesome. Once again, going back to The Adventurer is a fairly simple game. I had a player aid for my middle school kids that I was teaching simply because they needed to be able to lay their cards out to see how they were being encumbered and how much they could move and how their dice could go. The card that they give us to do it in Adventurers is perfect if you've played games before and you understand these concepts of being encumbered and what it can do. But it really helped having the kids be able to lay them out and they could see how it was doing it.
See, now that's the thing with Becky and I, is we've developed a shorthand on game learning where we can go, oh, it's similar to X game. Oh, and then we both go, oh, okay, we know, okay. And then we go, we've now bypassed several of the rule paragraphs and we go, okay, we can go to this now. But yeah, actually some of the best ones, the ones that I immediately turn to if I can find them is, it's either called Universal Head or Headless Hollow. They're a group of people that put together teaching sheets, or basically they distill the rule book down to like 4 pages, if not less. And they're gorgeous.
That's very important because a lot of people, especially on the fringes of the hobby, you know, like people who know us, my brother, for example, he knows the games. He also knows that the games come, when you want to learn them, with a 32-page book of how to play the game. Now, he just wants to play a game. He's not into the hobby. So if you could get them beyond the, oh my God, how much do I have to study in order to just play a game? It's helpful to be able to distill it down to a sheet to say, okay, it's not a 35-page book you have to study. We can explain the basic rules to you in 15 minutes. We can start the game. You can ask some questions going on. And depending upon how competitive the people are that you're playing with, both you as teaching it, the other players, and the new one, you can maybe get by with, it's okay to make a few mistakes and not actually win your first game.
Yes, and don't feel bad if you realize you have made a mistake. One of our common stories, which is, I think, quite endearing to the entire group, is one of our favorite games we've played, is that our group, whenever we bring it out, it's one we always, it always, everyone's enjoys, is Bonanza, bean yep. farming game. It just hits the trigger for almost everyone that we've played with it.
And it's one of our favorite family games. We would always take it camping with us, and when we would be traveling and we'd have to hit the laundromat, we would play Bonanza, the three of us.
And we found out relatively recently we had been playing one rule wrong. It didn't, it changed how we play, of course, but it was interesting. We go, oh, that didn't invalidate any of the games we played before. We just get, okay, we've now learned.
We were playing it on a slightly easier level. In the game, you have to get rid, you can't get rid of a field if it only has one bean in it. You right. have to get rid of the larger one.
We missed that rule.
But we missed that rule. It makes it easier to score when you play it that way. So, you know, we were playing it probably the simple way, but it really didn't matter because we still had fun playing it.
Yeah, and that's, I've run into games where we come through and we play and then we review and, oh, we missed this rule. That happens. We okay, all right, great. We all played, because we all played on the same rule. That's the thing I always get on there. Because the important is that we're having fun playing the games, which, you know, comes around, that's the why we play or why we want to do this, because we're trying to bring other people in. It's something we enjoy as a hobby and are looking to make sure other people will enjoy it and have a good time with us.
Yeah. If you run into somebody, though, it's important to know, if you have somebody who is really, really important, the rules are very important to them, that they have to read the rule book first, then if you can, make sure they get the rule book the week before you're going to play the game so that they can read it through. Because those are the people, you know, you give me a rule book, say, I'll teach you this game. I'll say, I don't want the rule book. Go ahead, teach it to me. But if it's important to the person, give them the rule book. Let them read it through. That they will do that. They will study it. They will have it all figured out. They will come in and you'll say something. They'll say, no, that's not how I said it. And I said, well, let's go back to the rule book. Check it out. Maybe I've been doing it wrong. Fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't create the game, so it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. And so then we want you to make sure you're open up to players, open up to the games, and enjoy not only the games you're playing, but enjoy the people you're having good time with. And that's what we're all trying to get to there.
And know the purpose of teaching the game. If it is you want to have 15 minutes and then you want to sit down and play a game with them, you know, that's different than, well, we just want to give you a couple. These are three different games. They're all different fun. They're different things to give them an introduction into the hobby.
Right.
Check out our podcast notes and drop us an email about, you know, what you think about teaching games and good experiences, bad experiences, whether you like to teach games to people.
Oh, yeah. Or,
and also we could have a whole one on being the student. How do you learn to
how
play
do you
games?
Learn a new game?
So that'll have to be,
that'll be a good
another
one
podcast.
That'll be a good one.
And now it's time for the game review,
where we talk about a game we really like or recently played.
The tabletop meta rating system has four levels. At the top of the list is
buy it. I have to have this in my game library.
One step down,
I like this game. I will play it anytime.
Just below that,
I will play it if someone else wants to play it or if I really want to be at the table.
And the bottom of the rating is
it's not my kind of game. I think I'll pass. This week, our spotlight game is Alhambra, one of my favorite classic games. I call it a classic game on there. In Alhambra, each player is attempting to build by obtaining and laying tiles to form your Alhambra. The player purchases the tiles with one of four different currencies. Each building has different costs, correspond to the color. But that cost is irrelevant to the actual scoring, just to purchase it, to put your in the area of your Alhambra. Then you have three different scoring rounds where your points are earned. The one with the most points scores the point for each type in each round, scores the most. The game plays 2 to 6 players. It's about 45 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on the number of people, and you can play up to 6 on it. And we've always had fun with this game.
Yeah.
It's something, it is a more of a visual game.
Yes, because you have to be able to build your Alhambra in a certain way so that the walls, so that you can walk to every part of your Alhambra. but yet having the longest connected wall you get, you score points for. And if you can get a long wall, you can really score a lot of points.
They have to be oriented a certain way unless there's some of the expansions. For me, I like that visual aspect of building this environment compared to everyone else. I find, though, when you're scoring, you do want to keep your... I keep a track of sort of who's got different colors and how I compare.
The four colored currencies just are for buying your buildings,
mm-hmm.
so that you have. But the scoring, there's six different colors.
There's six different colors
of buildings that you buy. And
so that can be a little confusing because you may be buying a blue building, but you're using orange currency because that's in the category it's sold under.
Right. Plus, the purple buildings are worth the most.
Mm-hmm.
And you only score for if you have the largest number of purple buildings in your Alhambra compared to others. And as the thing goes on, so the scoring makes it more complex. The game itself is a very simple thing, but in order to know how to score, you really have to kind of pay attention to what the other people are building. Or you have to get really lucky. The last time we played, I got really lucky.
The last couple games, you've gotten very lucky.
Yeah, and I would love to claim that, yes, I've been carefully studying everybody around me and saving up my money, but it wasn't. It was more luck. I was able to lay all the tiles I got in a really fortunate manner,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not very visual usually, so it took me by surprise that the last couple of times we played, I did well at this.
Yeah, and there's a fair amount of luck because of the money that you draw and then the tiles that are laid out. You could have a poor combination where you never get the exact money you need to build those tiles that show off, or someone grabs that tile, and that's definitely one where if you like planning ahead, this is going to be a little bit more of a difficult game where you're going to have to basically, you might go, oh great, I can buy those two tiles, and then the person behind it buys one of them and then takes another and changes, then you're like, my whole plan is gone.
And if the purple tiles that you're collecting come out two people ahead of you and the person who plays just before you always buys it, you know, you have to be able to be a little flexible on this.
And one thing that we've always found with the game, the nice thing that, especially when we play at the coffee shop, is it is really nice because each player, when they're playing, they focus on their game. But generally, a lot of times when you're done with your turn, you can converse and talk, and you don't have to rush to immediately take another turn. You can take a moment, okay, I've reorganized, and you can, you know, it's kind of casual in that way.
As we said, our gaming group is a more casual gaming group, which I know is occasionally hard on Will, because Will occasionally likes to be very focused, and we're here to play the game.
Yes.
And I tend to be much more talkative than that. But we've managed to work it out. And again, when we're playing at the coffee shop, it's just more naturally a social environment. When we're playing at the game store, at the game group, at the Goblins, Goblin is a bit more focused.
Goblin's Workshop, yes.
Goblin's Workshop, yeah.
Which is also, it's not as open.
Right.
It's open in the environment, but it's basically more of a club, so it's definitely not everyone coming there. So, Becky, what would you, in our kind of rating system?
Oh, it's definitely a play it for me. I enjoy
like
the game.
It and
I
play
will
it.
Play it.
Me, it's kind of a, I would put it as a buy it.
Well, that's good, because we did buy it.
Well, I've got plenty of games I've bought that I would probably at second time go, I don't know.
You know.
But that's what trading is for.
So, yeah, I enjoy it. It's kind of a meditative game. It's one of those that hits my buttons when I like building my own.
Right.
My own Alhambra that I have. You're, unlike Carcassonne, where everybody's playing on one giant board, this one you build your own that you have, and I enjoy that. I like it when you have your own private goals that
mm-hmm.
you can do.
Oh, yeah, I found that enjoyable, too. So, again, thank you for listening. Please check us out on our various links and...
Yep, be sure to check out podcast notes that are at the end and visit our blog at tabletopmeta.com. We also have a Facebook and Instagram page, so yes. You can check that out too.
You've been listening to Tabletop Meta.
Because there's more to gaming than playing the game.
See you next time.
Tabletop Meta is produced and edited by Will and Becky Clutie as a part of Burlap and Daisies. For more information on Tabletop Meta, visit our website at tabletopmeta.com. There you can find show notes for each of our episodes, as well as blog posts and more. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter as Tabletop Meta, and on Instagram as tabletop_meta. Finally, check out our guild on BoardGameGeek. Thanks for being a part of Tabletop Meta, because there's always more to gaming than playing the game.